This is What Does It Profit? And I'm your host, Dr. Dawn Carpenter. Here we are, riding through toward the end of the third season. So it seems fitting to keep on the road. Last time, we were in West Virginia. Now we're headed a little further south, down the Shenandoah and into the heart of rural North Carolina. Why, you ask? Well, it's kind of a personal thing. You see, I was inspired by the conversation from our last episode about Solar Holler. In that episode, I talked with a former coal miner and his solar panel selling daughter, Elizabeth. Joe told the family origin story to us, and then Elizabeth shared it with eager relatives and extended family on Facebook. When Elizabeth texted me about all this, it got me thinking about my own origin story. Without going too far back, I'll tell you that my father was born in Kannapolis, North Carolina, and his mother was an orphan and a child worker in the textile mills of North Carolina. So let's get a little real. When you get to be of a certain age, people in your family who knew all the good family stories have passed away. If you're lucky, you've got photos. If you're even luckier, you've got a great memory or have access to a good family historian. In my case, not so much. So what did I do? I consulted a friend, James Benton, who wrote a fascinating book called Fraying Fabric: How Trade Policy and Industrial Decline Transformed America. Yes, it's true. I have friends who write this kind of stuff. I also reached out to Jimmy Warlick, who spent his COVID years researching his mother's story of working in the mills. This inspired him to create the Workers' Legacy Project, chronicling the stories of the other mill workers. Links to both of these resources are in the show notes. But it's one thing to know about the past. It's quite another thing to dream about the future. Let's head down to Morganton, North Carolina, a textile community nestled in between Charlotte and Asheville, and not too far from my ancestral roots, to see what the world looks like now. Here in the small town of Morganton, in North Carolina's Appalachian foothills, there's a growing co-op movement.
My name is Bobby Carswell, and I'm the Research and Development Director here at Material Return.
I met up with Bobby at the factory, and he showed me around. The operation was anything but your traditional assembly line. He and other employees pick up fabric waste from textile and furniture manufacturers in the area and bring it to the warehouse. From there, Material Return recycles the waste, which is then used for furniture, clothes, and other products.
This facility we're in right now, it's about 180,000 square feet. It's the biggest available space in Morganton, so that's why we moved in. We knew we were going to grow. But it used to be called Carolina Shoe Mill, one of the best work boot manufacturers, like my entire family. They all worked here at one point in their lives for, 10 years or 15 years.
Bobby was born and raised in Morganton.
I've never even moved out of the county before, so this is my home and my community.
As soon as Bobby graduated from high school in 2004, he says he cut fabric for a furniture company.
It all went to the landfill. Landfills are in Burke County, so we have one that's close, just right in the center of the county and stuff. So we'd watch that compactor leave every week, with 10,000 pounds probably inside it.
There was a time when Bobby's prospects in the industry were far from certain. Morganton was once the heart of North Carolina's textile manufacturing industry. But the loss of manufacturing jobs to overseas competitors during the 2009 recession devastated the region's economy. Some of these companies have a presence in Morganton, albeit leaner. Here's Bobby again.
The main forms of the manufacturing industry here is textiles and furniture. Those two manufacturing industries are still very strong here. A lot of it did leave and go overseas, but the furniture industry stayed here because it's a big, bulky business. It's a whole lot harder to ship sofas and couches and stuff overseas when you can ship 10,000 t-shirts in a single container. You can only ship a few sofas.
More than a decade after the recession, Morganton is thriving. Today, the city's jobs in the textile manufacturing industry look more like Bobby's than a factory with an assembly line. Material Return, where Bobby works, was created in 2017 to keep industrial textile waste out of the landfills.
I think just from an environmental standpoint, you know, it seems like the earth is burning. So it's pretty crucial to change the textile industry if it's going to be strong and remain and keep growing.
What Material Return is doing is different than recycling.
Recycling is taking something and turning it into something else. So if you have a water bottle that goes straight to a water bottle, that is a one-to-one. But a lot of times in textile manufacturing, it is a high-end textile that gets processed into a fiber, and then that fiber gets turned into something like insulation.
Bobby says most textile waste that's recycled gets turned into insulation for things like cars.
So you're getting, you know, pennies on the pound for that type of insulation instead of, you know, a pound of yarn costs $10 to $5 a pound. But when you grind it up, you might get 25 cents out of it. And it goes into that insulation, which is highly needed, but there is enough textiles out in the world to supply every industry ever with an insulation. You know, so there is billions of pounds produced and post-consumer as well. And that's where most textiles goes into this recycled, downcycled kind of state.
Material Return's focus is right in their name. They take used or leftover materials and turn it into new products, like socks and beanies, for brands across the country. This keeps those comfy t-shirts I love part of the circular economy. The circular economy is a regenerative approach to production and consumption, where waste is minimized and resources are kept in use as long as possible. It aims to create a closed-loop system where products and materials are designed for reuse and recycling.
For circularity, it's a one-to-one. So you put in a sock, you get a sock out on the other side. You put in a piece of fabric, you get a piece of fabric out on the other side. So that's that one-to-one. True circularity is the only way you can replace your supply chain of raw materials with circular material.
One of the largest customers of Material Return is a company called Project Repat, whose mission is to let no good t-shirt go to waste. They make those snuggly quilts that hold the memories of our past found in those well-worn and loved t-shirts. Once fashioned together, the remnants are sent to Material Return and, well, turned back into yarn for other uses within the circular system. So far, Material Return says they've diverted nearly 2 million pounds of textiles from the landfills. Material Return is part of the Industrial Commons, a nonprofit that's reinvigorating the region's textile and manufacturing industries, one co-op at a time. The Industrial Commons grew out of opportunity threats. An immigrant-led cut-and-sew factory that was named Cooperative of the Year by the U.S. Federation of Worker Co-ops in 2016. The driving force behind all of this is Morganton native Molly Hemstreet. In 2008, after attending Duke University, Molly returned to Morganton to teach public school. That's when she realized so many of her students and their families couldn't find a job. Molly wanted to help, so she asked herself,
how do you create a new system that is still based on the infrastructure that you have, but that is building ways in which that wealth can stay rooted?
The community couldn't wait for that next large company to come in and save them. They needed something different.
The main problem we're trying to solve is this chronic challenge of generational poverty. So the mission of the Industrial Commons is to rebuild a diverse working class based on locally rooted wealth. Because our communities and places like Appalachia have just faced the challenge of as boom and bust and work and no work.
People are the hands and heart of opportunity threads. So Molly says they deserve quality jobs.
We're creating dignity for folks that often go unnamed when you pull on a pair of socks or put on your sweater. And so what's so important to us is that the faces of the Southern working class is seen and heard from, and that they have a stake in this really vital, important green economy that's emerging and scaling.
In the cooperative businesses in the industrial commons, employees have a vote and a voice in the workplace. There are managers who run the businesses like any other managers would, but at the end of the day, the key decisions are made from the shop floor up. Industrial Commons was inspired by global models of cooperative ecosystems, like those in Mondragon, Spain, and Emilia-Romagna in Italy. Far from the models in Europe, Industrial Commons wants to be part of the conversation here in North Carolina. They want to show there are ways to organize work that can be both good for business and good for workers. But challenges remain. For one, North Carolina is a right-to-work state. That means state laws make it difficult for workers to organize. But nevertheless, there is a rich history of workers in the mill towns having a deep sense of community, and Industrial Commons shows that this is a great place to start.
What I love most about the communities that I work with are the people. I mean, we are communities of makers. We have made phenomenal furniture and textiles, weaving, knitting, spinning for generations. And so to have a diverse working class working on building out what the future of work can look like for textiles in the United States, you know, it's just every day I meet someone that inspires me. And I love that this is getting a foothold in a new generation. And so it's deeply inspiring to me. And I love folks like Bobby, you know, whose dad was one of like a premier furniture maker. And now he's still working in a factory, but he's like running, you know, a really innovative circular factory. And so it's really wonderful to see that generational change, but it's completely different because Bob is an owner of his company and Bob is making something that's completely green. And so to still like cherish our heritage in making, but to be able to do that in a completely new way that honors people and honors the planet is just what keeps me going and inspires me. And there are just stories after stories of those wonderful people.
As it happens, the Industrial Commons continues a long tradition of co-ops in Appalachia. In fact, North Carolina is the eighth largest worker co-op state in the country, according to a 2021 report by the U.S. Federation of Worker Cooperatives. Industrial Commons uses its network to bid on joint contracts and harness its collective manufacturing capacity so that they can get enough business to stay open and thrive. They use recycled materials when they can and source raw materials as locally as possible. This community is changing the nature of work and wealth, one business at a time. I have to say I'm encouraged and inspired. As you remember, I started this quest thinking about my own family history and my grandmother, who was a child worker in the mills in North Carolina. My family parallels the history of the state. Over the course of the last two or three generations, we've gone from Dickens-like labor abuses to feeling the squeeze of jobs going away. My dad worked in a tire factory that later moved operations to Mexico. Then years later, I went to Wall Street and found out how it all happened. In all of this, what did we get? What did I think about on the drive back to the studio? Actually, you might not believe it. Just one exit north from Morganton is Hickory, North Carolina. I kid you not, the site of the Henry River Mill Village, the ghost mill town where producers of the film The Hunger Games came to shoot their movie about a dystopian society. It's kind of like the universe calling out for comment. To this podcast host, the similarities between the movie The Hunger Games and the reality are striking. The dystopian society portrayed in the film, where the ruling class enjoys luxurious lifestyles while the working class population struggles with poverty and oppression, just echoes the socioeconomic conditions that have emerged in many regions that have undergone deindustrialization. Much like the people in the districts in The Hunger Games, residents of the deindustrialized communities often face a lack of economic opportunities, underfunded schools, substandard housing, and inadequate infrastructure. The deindustrialization of regions like North Carolina has led to a widening wealth gap, with those in positions of power and privilege often making decisions that perpetuate the disparities. The Hunger Games serves as a warning of the dangers of allowing power to become so concentrated that it leads to the exploitation and disenfranchisement of vast sections of the population. But if the Hunger Games are a warning, Industrial Commons is a hope. Next up on What Does It Profit? Our road trip across America ends with a home run.
Last baseball season, from May to late September, I made $9,800.
Off-season, you're on your own. Part-time seasonal intern.
The untold story of how minor league baseball won a union just in time for the start of their season. What Does It Profit is a production of the Solidarity Economy Workshop at Georgetown University. The show is hosted by me, Dr. Dawn Carpenter. Jordan Gasparre is our senior producer. Our engineer and designer is Mark Bush. Special thanks to our Season 3 researchers and assistant producers, Sophia Chen, Hannah Woodford, Andy Fang, and Jasper AI. An extra special thanks to our intern, Abby Trepas, who has actually seen the movie The Hunger Games. Music for What Does It Profit was composed by Nick Pennington. Support for What Does It Profit is provided by the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor, the McDonough School of Business, and the Capital Applied Learning Lab at Georgetown University. You can learn more at whatdoesitprofitpodcast.com.